Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Dick Campbell. I'm the attorney for Ian Spedding Trust, acting through his guardian conservator and his mother, Cindy Spedding. Come before you today to appeal a summary judgment granted by Judge Brooke Jackson, Jefferson County, concerning provision in Doug Spedding's will on a particular bequest to Ian. It would help, if we may, give you a brief backdrop as to how this got here today. The genesis, I guess, of the issue started when Doug and Cindy Spedding decided to get divorced, probably in 1992, and for over 10 years were engaged in a contentious, strong, and what you can typically call a bitter divorce. There were two children born of this marriage. One was Sean Spedding and the other was Ian. Ian was born a little bit different. He was born with Leopard syndrome. Leopard syndrome is a disease or an affliction that has an ailment for every word, every letter in the word leopard. For example, the D, he has a hearing problem. He has a pulmonary stenosis. He's autistic, which is not necessarily tied to leopard. He had, at the time he was born, his lifespan didn't look too good, but today he's 20 years old. And for 20 years, his mother, Cindy, has cared for him 24/7. That's her life, and that's her job, is caring for Ian. Early on in the divorce, for whatever reasons, Doug Spedding resisted providing for Ian, both on the support issues and on the estate issues of what property he would leave. And there was an undercurrent based upon the correspondence that Ian, the special needs kid, let the state take care of him. Well, Doug was a pretty successful businessman. Ian was treated differently by his father as far as the relationship, visitation, and whatever. Cindy, his mother, was adamant that Ian be treated equally as any other kid. Doug Spedding had 9 kids. Ian and Sean, born to Cindy Spedding, were 2 of them. And it was against this background that they entered into a settlement agreement, heavily negotiated settlement agreement in 1994, and the two operative provisions, really one, but one is kind of significant as an aside. Doug was to provide a trust for Ian, a special needs trust, that he would maintain a minimum of $15,000 in a bank account for special needs, respite care, and whatever. The other provision was paragraph 6, which is one that we're here today, that Doug would leave Ian and his estate when he died and value equal to what every other kid was getting. And this was very important to Cindy, because although Ian might have been different by the accident of his birth, she wanted him treated on the same footing and the same standards as Doug would treat his other kids. And so they negotiated the separation agreement. As it turns out, paragraph 5 he never complied with. As paragraph 6 on the giving him of no lesser value, that continued to get worked over. Doug and his lawyer, who is not his divorce lawyer, but who's, according to Doug, an expert in these matters, met with Cindy outside of her lawyer, never notified her lawyer, divorce lawyer, that they were meeting, and presented to her a modification of this separation agreement, which in effect, they told Cindy, Ian would be better off, Cindy would be better off if they did a special needs trust that was funded by $1 million life insurance policy. In other words, the special needs would put Ian, this trust would put Ian back in to the government programs, and his special needs trust would only provide for things that the government, social services or whatever, didn't pay for. Cindy signed it. She was told she didn't need a lawyer, this was best for Ian, and she signed it. Well, her divorce lawyer got hold of it and, as you would expect, went ballistic. And that got turned around in court. And I say this just to give you an idea of the fight, and I'm short-circuiting it considerably. Doug was to include this provision in his will to make sure that Ian got an equal value as any other children. In 2002, Susan, Doug's secretary, called Cindy Spedding, they were friends, and said Doug hadn't put Ian in as will. So there was another contempt proceeding that was filed in the divorce court, and he was ordered to put a provision in his will providing for Ian a share equal in value to what every other kid got. Doug died in November 2007. He was survived by his wife and 9 children. His estate, it's not finally determined yet, was valued at $45 million. And you can see the value of that number, why Cindy maybe didn't want her son to be a ward of the state for pride, and maybe it wasn't proper if they could afford to do otherwise. Following his death, Cindy never knew the will. She had seen, her attorney apparently had seen this one provision relating to Ian. She had no idea how the other kids were being treated under the will and did not know it till after Doug died and the will was admitted probate and it became public. Well, what she found out was that 3 kids got outright distributions, roughly $3 million for lack of another number. Gloria Spedding, his wife, when he died, her son, who was not Doug's son, got a full share, $3 million. 3 other kids got full shares in trust with the right to partial distributions at 25, 30, 35, and a final disposition at 40. So 8 kids, including, well, 9, if you want to count Gloria's son, got full access to all their money. Ian gets a trust for his needs, with contingent beneficiaries, 8 children, most of whom he doesn't even know. And that's the contest, is taking and giving outright gifts to 3 children, so giving gifts to 4 children who get distributions and who've already got pretty good cash distributions, equal value. We submit it as not. It creates a lot of problems. It creates a lot of conundrum. You know, you can think of, I got 3 kids. If I told them I was going to give them each $10,000, and I said, here, 2 of you, here's your $10,000, but you got the 10, and if you don't spend it all, you got to give it to somebody else. That's not equal value. The $10,000 is equal. That's equal amount, but it's not equal value in my view.
Ms. Campbell, here's my friend, and you went through a lot of background facts that I'm, you know, maybe helpful background, but I'm not sure they're directly relevant to the interpretive question we have. And my problem is this. Paragraph 6 of the separation agreement says the trust shall be funded in an amount equal to the, or shall be no less than the total value of real and personal property given to other children. Wasn't the trust funded in the exact same amount of the property given to the other children?
Well, it will be if we ever get this resolved, yes.
What do you mean if we get this, your position prevails?
It's in banks. It's still in the estate. It hasn't been distributed because of this dispute that they're not going to release the money to.
Okay, fair enough. But at the end, if this dispute is resolved, not the merits of what's here today, but the funding issue, wasn't it funded in the amount equal to the amount?
Yes, it is.
And isn't that what the language says? I'm having trouble, you know, whatever, you know, I don't see that the separation agreement deals with remainder interest. It deals with the amount of the funding of the trust, especially when these trusts
are in. I think the intent is that the money is of equal value. The amount is equal value. Arguably, it's funded with the amount, but that's not equal value, in my opinion.
And you may be right. I think that may be right, but I don't see how you square that with the plain language of the separation agreement.
Well, I guess I just think if we would have used the term, I was involved in it, I would have used the term equal amount instead of value.
You have a good point.
The true value, because I don't think the true value, even though the amount might be equal, I don't think the true value is equal. You got it, let's say it's $3 million for the sake of discussion. You got $3 million, but it's not equal. And that it's not the same value, and that's where I would hang my argument. And I think some deference has to be given to Cindy, the mother, of what her express intent was. Because her express intent wasn't, say, give them the same amount, period. That term value was in there for a purpose. Now, did we everybody see what was coming? I doubt that they did. It probably would have been written differently.
Mr. Campbell, I see that in your briefs you're making an ambiguity argument. Was that raised in the trial court?
was raised, it was, with some judgment, it was raised as defense. The trial court did not find it, there was no oral argument. The trial court did not find it ambiguous.
I'm sorry, so you did raise it, but the trial court did not rule on it?
No, the trial court ruled that it was not ambiguous.
Okay.
And I'll give you a conundrum today. When you got eight kids or third party in administering a trust, when you got eight contingent beneficiaries, three of the children, this is probably not relevant, but it tells you why it's not, I guess cites to me why it's not equal value. Three of the children have filed a motion in Jefferson County Court that if it's granted would open up an examination of how the assets of the estate have been administered. What can Cindy Spedding do, or the trustee of Ian's trust, to spend any money to get involved in that suit, even though they have an interest, and not be chastised that you shouldn't be spending our remainder interest on fighting lawsuits? And which has the merit or not, haven't examined it, but that's an issue. And that's where the equal value comes in. Thank you.
Please the court, Clinton P. Swift, registration 7127, on behalf of Gloria Spedding, as a representative of Douglas Spedding's estate and as a trustee of the 1996 trust. And with a registration 7127, I do have an appreciation of history, Your Honor. My first point is that it is the appellee's position that the trial court's grant of either the motion to dismiss or treating it as a motion for summary judgment should be affirmed, because there was no ambiguity, and the issue of whether there was an ambiguity was not raised in the trial court. It was not raised in the opening brief. It was only raised by the appellant in the response brief. The appellant, in two places in the opening brief, uses the word plain language, and we took that, at least initially, to mean there was no ambiguity. Only in the response brief by the appellant did they raise the issue of ambiguity.
But do you mean the reply brief, counsel?
The reply brief, I'm sorry, Your Honor. But the second point is, yes, this court's review is de novo, both as to whether it is a grant of a motion for summary judgment or whether it is a motion to dismiss. The standard review is de novo in this case. What is critical is that the appellant brought in the district court a single claim for declaratory judgment. The appellant claimed that the 1996 trust did not conform to paragraph 6 of the separation agreement. And it was that sole issue that was presented to Judge Brooke Jackson in Jefferson County District Court. The district court found that there were two agreements, the separation agreement and the 1996 trust, that governed the issue. There was no dispute. The documents were attached by both sides to the pleadings, that those were the operative documents. As we've cited in the papers, Your Honor, the trial court at this point was not required to accept either the legal conclusions or arguments of either side or the factual claims at variance with the actual expressed documents in considering the motion. The appellant does not challenge the trial court's findings that the separation agreement and the 1996 trust are the two operative documents. And initially, the issue was not raised in the trial court as to an ambiguity in either of the documents. The appellant concedes that dispute can be resolved, at least in the opening brief, by the plain language. Of course, the final brief makes an argument with respect to ambiguity that was not before the trial court. It is the appellee's position that the operative language of the two documents are not ambiguous, The appellant concedes that, well, no, Your Honor, let me move to a different point. The appellant asserts that they should have been allowed an opportunity to argue in support of their declaratory judgment action. However, as this court knows, argument cannot raise a genuine issue. The appellant's claim that his share be distributed outright into a trust created by Cynthia, the 2008 trust, is not supported by the plain, clear language of the separation agreement. The separation agreement unambiguously requires Douglas to set up a trust, a discretionary trust, and that Ian's share be held in trust, and that Cynthia be appointed as the trustee. On his death, Cynthia was appointed, the trust was established. Then you come to the language that's at the heart of the dispute between the parties, and appellee, it should be no surprise, agrees with Justice Connolly that
don't promote me.
That it's clear, it's unambiguous, it says just to be funded in an amount. There are no references in the 1996 trust to what happens upon the death of Ian, and that left it Judge Brooke Jackson properly found, to the discretion of Douglas Spetter. So there is a concession today in oral argument and in page 11 of the opening brief that the amount actually funded is equal to the amounts left to the other beneficiaries of the trust.
Let me ask you a question about that. In the reply brief, there's a reference to a provision, which I assume is from the trust, entitled Distributive Shares for Molly, Julie, Laura, and Sean. And it says, quote, since the settlor has made provisions for them outside this trust, unquote. I mean, doesn't that raise a potential factual issue that at least those four offspring got more than Ian?
Well, first, it wasn't raised with the trial court. But beyond that, Your Honor, no, it doesn't, because if you look at the four corners of the document itself explains, and those four beneficiaries have the amount funded for them reduced by the $100,000 that each one of them got separately. So within the document, you can look at those same four that received funds outside of the trust, and there's a provision that that amount that they received outside the trust reduces the value that's funded for each one of those four.
Thank you.
So that's addressed within the document itself, Your Honor. It is the appellee's position that the appellant lacks standing because the appellant, Ian, is not harmed himself. There's a funding, it's for his benefit, it's discretionary, the trustee can use all or any portion of it, and that the only issue...
You're not really contesting that he has standing, or that the trust or his guardian has standing
The guardian does have standing on behalf, but of course...
I just wanted to make sure we weren't talking about a separate issue.
But the guardian in this case is the beneficiary, and that's really the issue that's being raised. Under the separation agreement, there was no requirement that...
You're saying the substantive claim fails, not that the person has lacks standing.
Right. I mean, Cynthia basically wants the residuary of the trust when Ian dies, and that's why she wants it put in the 2008 trust that she created, that names her as the beneficiary on his death. That's the only difference between the 1996 trust and Cynthia's 2008 trust, that she's claiming that the money should be distributed to that trust. There are no other substantive differences between them.
Can you address the contention by Mr. Campbell in the briefs, and then I think again in argument today, that setting up this way runs the risk that the contingent beneficiaries could challenge Cynthia's expenditures as guardian and say that's somehow interfering with our remainder interest. Is that a, how do you respond to that risk?
Well, as to four of the others that are beneficiaries, there's the same risk because upon their death, there's a distribution to the other living beneficiaries.
Although, as I understand, those are only temporary trusts till they're age 40, is that
right? Until age 40, yes, Your Honor. There is a distinction, but there's, one, it's not an issue that's ripe yet. Nothing has occurred in that regard. And it's equally possible that by the time that Ian is of a certain age that the total trust funds would be exhausted and there is not going to be any distribution to anybody in any event because it's discretionary and Cynthia can use all or any part of it for his benefit. So I guess my point only would be that I don't think it's ripe for adjudication before the court at this point. But I think the other point is that it is the position of the appellee that the trial court lacks jurisdiction to amend the separation agreement. And that's what is being requested. But the trial court in Denver, because it's the domestic relations court, would have jurisdiction for any amendment of the separation agreement, which is what's requested, not Jefferson County. So in conclusion, the separation agreement itself is silent with respect to the disposition of the trust assets upon Ian's death or the identity of the remainder beneficiaries. Jurisdiction, if at all, in the separation agreement as to treatment of the remainder would be in Denver, not Jefferson County. We believe that the documents are consistent, that Judge Brooke Jackson read all of the terms, gave them the plain and fair meaning, and that the decision of the trial court should be affirmed by this court.
Just a couple of comments. Cindy Spinning isn't trying to get the money. She's taking care of this kid 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and will for the next day, however many years she's got left. Her nightmare is what happens to Ian if she dies first, and I'm sure it's a vice versa. So it's not a money grab. It's a grab that here's a kid that now she's got to take care of him. She's got to walk a balance. She's not a sophisticated business person. She'll have advisors, lawyers, and whatever. But the value of the money, amount of money, you can have $1 million here and $1 million there, and it's the same amount, but it might not have the same value if it's got conditions and restrictions and other things put on it. And I think that's the key there. It's not the amount. You have to relate the amount to the value in their situations when a dollar is not a dollar, or $1 has more value than another dollar because of the freedom that it can be used, that it can be spent, and the discretion that the person that owns that dollar has. It does not. As far as the standing or the proper court, this is we think the separation agreement is what it is, and I think we're in the proper court. I hope that's, I don't see that as an issue, but it's not that they make it look a power grab and a money grab on account of Cindy. Cindy's not looking for money. She's looking that if she dies, that she's able to provide a home for Ian and maybe kids like him so he don't have to go into an institution and live the rest of his life there. That's her nightmare and her dream. So it's not like she's going to go off to Rio de Janeiro for the rest of her life. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course. Counsel are excused in this case, and since that completes our docket, the bailiff may announce a recess.
All rise. The court will be in recess.
Starting place of all nine of the last guys. guy's doing, Julie. I doubt that will be the last ones in their new days. Well, we'll have a good day.